All right. We'll go to Belfast and to a colleague of ours, somebody who we go to when we want to know what's happening, and we thought today would be a tremendous day to welcome back. There's been a silence for some time because of the COVID and other things have taken precedent. But first of all, Quinton Oliver, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Good to be talking to you this fine day as we try and plan out what 2021 will bring and hope it's very different from 2020.
Listen, I don't know where to start other than from what we hear, and we know very little about it, other than to say the first, what appears to be the first wrinkle, you know, in the trade agreement with, you know, with due to Brexit, with now you have, well, you know, our new president, Joe Biden, giving a good rattle to Prime Minister Boris Johnson, you know, to make sure that Northern Ireland is not upended in, you know, in Brexit, and everything seemed to be kind of all right, and then all hell is breaking loose because Arlene Foster and Micheál Martin and everybody, it seems to be rattled by, above all things, the imports and export, including vaccine. What's going on there?
Well, there's a lot of things overlapping, and what we saw in the last 24 hours was a perfect storm, because what we have is the first month of Brexit, and therefore there's lots and lots of teething problems and more substantial problems about the trade routes from Ireland to Britain and from Ireland to the EU. That used to go, a lot of that trade used to go across the island of Britain, so that was a land bridge, they called it. And so understandably, there's a lot of glitches in the paperwork, in the documentation, in the certificates that traders and lorry drivers have to produce. And there's a big growth in customs officers, so that seems to be one of the few growths in jobs is in customs officials on the various borders. Then you've got COVID with the restrictions on travel and movement and getting close to people. So that's an added difficulty. And then in the last 24 hours, we've had the vaccination drama. And essentially what happened was the European Union pulled an emergency lever too quickly. And they reneged on that and apologized for it late last night, because there was an emergency lever in the arrangements, but they pulled it too quickly in order to prevent vaccines leaving the EU and getting into Britain through the back door of Northern Ireland. And that was a mistake on their part, and they've pulled that and apologized. So that takes us back more or less, although the shock of that big mistake has caused ripples. It takes us back to how much of the problems are now teething problems and will get sorted as people become more efficient, and how much are structural problems in the trade agreement between the EU 27 countries and the UK, which has now left.
Quinton, I just want to, you know, to see if you can zero in on, it's okay to say it's a mistake, it was fantastic to apologize. So is that done and dusted, it's over with, let's not worry about it at all? That's not...
No, there will be significant diplomatic ripples because it was such a big nuclear button to press by the European Commission. And although they're passing it off as a more junior official who didn't understand the sensitivities in Ireland, and they've said that Ireland as a country, one of the 27 member states of the EU, wasn't consulted. So that was a huge diplomatic error. So the ripples from that error will continue. But the border on the island of Ireland, which is so important to so many people that there be an open border, is now open again, because momentarily the EU were threatening to block the export of vaccines across the border. Although why they would want to do that, I don't know, because Northern Ireland gets its vaccines within the UK and is well supplied. So it seems to be, I mean, to call it a storm in a teacup would be wrong, because the diplomatic implications and political implications are huge. But it will not cause any frictions in trade in the immediate future.
Quinton, I want to ask you about, maybe you can decipher for us or give us some of the most important, if not aggravating, bottom line of Brexit, which many thought, some would say, well, we knew well it would only come up to the, that it would come up to the 11th hour. And some others would say, well, wait a minute, you know, there was plenty of time to iron out some aspects of that, particularly for Northern Ireland. And, you know, when you have incidents like this one, okay, how do you see and what are the sticking points, you know, in Brexit that will indeed adversely affect Northern Ireland? Can you give us like a couple of those?
Those are good questions, and that's what we're trying to assess at the moment. And currently, the biggest problem seems to be the implementation of the border in the sea. You'll remember, to protect a free border on the island so that there were no physical restrictions and no checks on trade north and south on the island, they created and imposed a border on the Irish Sea, which means that trade from Britain into Northern Ireland is now much more controlled by paperwork and customs controls. And that has always been true of animals, for example, to prevent animal disease crossing the sea onto the island. That's always been the case. But now it's affecting a whole host of other things that are causing distress and difficulty for truckers and for supermarkets and for even the postage service are having to get custom certificates on some items. So cheese and dairy products, for example, are having to get very expensive veterinary certificates. So that's possible if you have a whole juggernaut lorry full of dairy products for a big supermarket. But if you're getting something for a delicatessen or for a small shop or individually, the supplier isn't going to absorb the cost of a £200 or $300 veterinary certificate, which would outweigh the cost of the goods. So in the last month of January, we've had problems with cheese, with dairy products, with hay, with grass, with silage, with pork products. The latest one this week was with plants. The horticultural garden centres in Northern Ireland can't get plants from Britain. So the spring flowers and the primroses are being stopped at the Scottish border and are not getting across because now there are rules to be obeyed. Amazon, the big distributor company Amazon, has said it won't be supplying Northern Ireland for some things even wine shipping has been causing difficulties, and it's thought that there might be a premium on wine that comes across from Britain into Northern Ireland. So those are some of them are glitches and teething problems, but some of them are substantial problems that will require readjustment. So haulage companies are looking at moving their goods not across the island of Britain into Europe, but down from Rosslare across to Cherbourg directly into the European market. So there'll be some readjustment and jobs will shift in order to accommodate that. And then we'll be left thinking, well, what have we actually lost and who's lost out? And can that be replaced by alternative sources of producing goods and then selling them into different markets?
Yeah. In the meantime, though, it would appear that, as you've outlined there, in addition to the inconvenience of it all, it would appear, though, that despite our interpretation that from once Brexit was there, from once the dotted line was, bore the signatures, that it would, you know, that it would be fairly easy after that without having to wait to see where the warts would show up, as it were. Is there unease? Are you going to have people saying teething problems? Not. This bloody thing wasn't going to work in the first place. And they could have known that. And when you have, again, the lorries, the trucks, and everything lined up because of, a lack of planning or for whatever it is. How is that being interpreted? Are the nerves a bit frayed there at the moment, at least, anyway?
Yes. There are lots of concerns, especially amongst the unionist community, who feel that they, in order to protect free trade on the island of Ireland, that they have been punished by this border in the sea and that they're being cut off from their natural motherland in England, Scotland, Wales. So they have concerns about that. And there is opportunity in the nationalist world that this will shift the direction of travel from east-west, Northern Ireland into Britain and Ireland into Europe, into more north-south opportunity. So we view these things, as you're very well aware, through a political lens. So unionists are now feeling upset that they have been abandoned by their mothership in Westminster in London after they lost their parliamentary pivotal arithmetic significance in the last election in December. So unionism's feeling bruised. And nationalism is feeling confident that there's now an opportunity to shift the debate into an all-island economy. And the trade agreement with the EU does advantage that, because if you make a product in Northern Ireland, you can send it freely into the British market, and you can also send it into the European market. So the growth potential there is for factories and producers to move to Northern Ireland in order to have access to both the outgoing EU member, the UK, through Brexit now on its own, and also to the 450 million consumers of the European market by driving the 30 miles across the border at Letterkenny or Dundalk into the European market through through Ireland.
Of course, we are delighted, particularly in Irish, throughout Irish America, that as in the past that our president quite boldly put on his priority list for his first calls to leaders throughout the world, that he didn't put a tooth in it, so to speak, in telling Boris Johnson, listen, let's adhere to the Belfast Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement. Don't mess with that period, full stop. Many felt that that was at least very cheeky, bold, but obviously it did help. You know, as it went into the final negotiations. For those who were in the UK and Britain who could care less about Northern Ireland, was that, how did that go over? Was it, were there, you know, hair standing in the back of the heads of the, were the feathers ruffled by that, or was it just saying, that's just the president humoring the nationalist community? How was that interpreted?
No, it was certainly taken very seriously, because the UK, now having left the European Union, is desperate to make trade deals around the world, and the biggest obvious market is the USA. So they're looking for a U.S. trade deal. So when the new president of the U.S. Underlines his Irishness and his Irish credentials, that's obviously going to have an effect in 10 Downing Street. So that did have an impact, and that will have been taken note of. However, there will also have been some of that balancing force, saying, look, every American president claims to be Irish. Remember the Obamas of Moneygall. Remember the Reagan visits. Remember even George Bush dusting down his Irish credentials. That doesn't mean very much because they're playing to an Irish-American sentimental audience in the States. Wait until we see the color of their policies. So that's what we're all now looking to see of the Biden administration. There's clearly a benefit in his Irish roots. He visited when he was vice president. So clearly those are well documented, and he's appointed a lot of significant Irish Americans into posts in his new administration. But the question will be, beyond the visit and beyond the St. Patrick's Day light celebrations that we've heard about already on your program this morning, what are the serious policies that the Biden administration is going to adopt vis-a-vis Ireland and vis-a-vis UK after Brexit?
How, now that Brexit has been signed off on, what is the general feeling throughout the UK with respect to how this was handled? Can you take us to Scotland? And they were obviously, and we discussed it here many times, that Scotland were a bit, uneasy and quite anxious to secede, from the UK, and now, and they pointed at, say, Brexit, as saying, well, through no fault of our own, that Brexit stuff came up, and we'll see what happens. So Brexit is in place. What is, and how is the reaction, say, in Scotland, and does this change the dynamics there of those? Are they quite happy to stay where they are and let this shake out, see how they make out, or are there still those in Scotland who say, no, no, you want to know something? Fine. We'd be better off maintaining a relationship with the EU, and if that means, you know, seceding, separating from Westminster, so be it.
Yes, the tectonic plates are certainly shifting beneath the United Kingdom, and they will be most sharply noticed in Scotland. You remember that the independence referendum of 2014 resulted in a 45% vote for independence of Scotland. And since then, in the 7 years since then, the Scots have become even more convinced that a second independence referendum is due because of Brexit. And they regard that as a material change in circumstances, allowing them to argue for a second referendum. And the opinion polls have shifted. They've moved now slowly, not seismically. They've moved slowly from 45% in the actual poll of 2014 to 55. So it's reversed 55-45 in the actual poll, and now it's 55 say in opinion polls that they would vote for independence, largely because Brexit has been a material change in circumstances, but also because the Scottish National Party, which is in government in Scotland, in the devolved government, has been perceived to be more effective during the COVID pandemic. So Boris Johnson has been seen as less competent and less clear and less empathetic, whereas Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish leader and First Minister, has been seen to be effective, competent, sympathetic, and to have led our country extremely well. So the debate is very clear now. When can we have a referendum to give it a go again? And will we actually vote for independence, given that Brexit has happened, given that re-entry to the European Union for Scotland as an independent country is not guaranteed, given the problem of what currency they would use, given the problem, and because of the Irish debate on Brexit over the last 5 years, we all know the problems of hard borders. So there would definitely be a hard border between Scotland and England. So that would create another big barrier. And the campaign will be fought again on national identity and national pride to be Scottish and independent against the economics, which don't look good for an independent country at this stage.
Let me ask you about you know, the effects of you know, of COVID. Again, you know, it not only you know, has obviously a very startling and scary effect on countries throughout the world, but as an you know, as a economic impact, is there, you know, you pointed out there, you know, 55% now, say, in Scotland, as opposed to the 45% before. But we do know that sometimes calling a referendum, as, you know, one that went wrong in the UK and resulted in Brexit in the first place. Is this a time, and is this the appropriate time, to be trotting that out, when in fact the flow of goods, whether for, you know, for Southern Ireland with direct access, and now the current ripple, you know, in Northern Ireland, is some of this going to get into the drift to the back burner, so to speak, until we get the vaccines sorted out? How do you see that?
Yes, there's three big waves washing over us here in Western Europe. We've got the COVID challenge, which is huge, and the vaccination opportunity. And for once, the UK has got that right. It's one of the few things in the last year where it can say it's world beating. So its vaccination program is one of the most effective and fastest across the developed world. So they're doing well on vaccination, but COVID will be followed by a deep recession. The government is borrowing huge amounts of money in order to pay workers' wages and to prop up businesses and companies like hospitality and tourism and aviation, who are all but destroyed by the lack of activity. So we've got a huge economic challenge and probably a recession. And then we've got climate change coming alongside that, with all the difficulties and challenges of that. So some people say, let's deal with those issues and leave constitutional niceties like independence for Scotland or a border poll on the island of Ireland until later. But others in those camps who want independence for Scotland or who want a border poll on our island are saying, no, no, we could handle these things better. And it's essential that we pursue those referendums in order to achieve our independence for Scotland or reunification of the island of Ireland, so that we can deal with the economics of recession and climate change quicker, more effectively, and more sensitive to people's needs. So that's where the debate is rather unhelpfully focused at the moment.
Yeah.
Let us get on with these problems, don't talk constitution, versus we have to sort the constitution or else we can't sort the problems.
As somebody who indeed has is considered worldwide to be somebody of tremendous influence in conflict resolution and in referendum, what's your overall view going forward? You've been in much and represented it and in many very sticky situations. If you were to look back, say, to 6 months ago and where we are now with Brexit and with the European Union, what's your opinion? Was this to be expected? Is it any better or worse than you thought? You and, you know, and your company, because that's what you do. What would you have?
Well, I think I coined the phrase on your own program, Adrian, in 2016, just after the Brexit referendum, that it would be cataclysmic. Whether or not it was successful, it would be cataclysmic in its implications. And it certainly has been over the 5 years. There's virtually no one that thinks that it's been an unalloyed success, and it's been fantastic, and the 5 years have been smooth negotiations, adequate preparations, and now reaping the benefits. No one argues that. So that has caused huge tensions and created chasms between parts of the UK, between Britain and Ireland, and so forth. So rebuilding that is going to be a really significant challenge. In terms of Scotland, I think that the demand for a second referendum are probably unanswerable, especially if the Scottish National Party wins a significant majority in the elections a few months from now in May. As to a border poll on our island, it seems to be moving in that direction as well. And that's because Brexit has shifted the dynamics utterly, because now everyone is talking about it, and we are looking north-south much more regularly than we are east-west. And when we look east-west, we see problems. We see trade problems. We see problems with COVID. We see the UK, the worst statistics on COVID. They relaxed too quickly last summer and incentivized people to go out to restaurants and cafes that fueled a second wave. They didn't deal with the mutation particularly well. They are doing the vaccinations well, but things, when you look across the water, aren't good. And then there is the Scottish question that concerns unionists and Protestants, because they look more to Scotland as their motherland, their mothership. That's where the plantations largely came from in 1600 and thereabouts. Whereas if we look south, we see a flourishing economy in Ireland. We see access to the European Union. We see the fantastic Erasmus program, which was a European program to allow young people to study in different countries across the European Union. Now, Brexit has meant that the UK is out of that and is looking at preparing their own scheme. But the Irish government has agreed to fund Northerners to take part in that scheme so they can go and study in Florence and Milan and Frankfurt and Rome and Paris, wherever they want across Europe. So the pull factor of the European Union is shifting a lot of views and opinions in the north. And that's why border poll is looking more likely than it did 5 years ago. Brexit has changed everything.
This will have to be, you know, a topic for another day. But I know that across America, particularly in Irish American circles, there's some smirking going that is going on here, saying, you know, after all the decades of looking for and moving towards, and particularly Irish Americans' support for United Ireland, you know, this might happen if we just let the hair sit, because that's the way it's drifting anyway. What's the general feeling? I don't want you as a, you know, as an expert in conflict resolution, and to, you know, in to get your feel on it. But what do you think? Is that another pipe dream? Is there something to it?
Well, as usual, Adrian, there's no general feeling coming out of Northern Ireland. We're deeply divided as ever. And there was a very extensive opinion poll across the four jurisdictions of the UK in the Sunday Times last week. Mm-hmm. And it showed that there is a slight uptick in Northern Ireland votes for United Ireland, but almost equal to those who would vote to stay in the United Kingdom. But I think the debate will accelerate in the next 5 years about what shape a new Ireland would take. And I think that that's the role and function partly of the Irish government to prepare better than the British government did for the Brexit debate. And everyone agrees that that vote in 2016 was taken largely in ignorance of what it actually meant and of which form of Brexit would be negotiated. And so I think there's now a will to improve the quality of debate. What would happen to Northern Ireland in the United Ireland were that to be voted on? What would happen to Stormont? Would it be abolished and everyone would just be voted to the dole? What would happen to the Shannon? What would happen to the Northern education system? What would happen to the Northern health service? What would happen to the Northern legal system? What would happen to Northern agriculture? So that debate about how you would build a new united country, I think is a very exciting one. And I think it's one that, if properly handled, could improve the quality of debate rather than just, as your cynical commentators would suggest, is just wait for demography, just wait for the Catholic population to grow, the Protestant population to emigrate, and then you can get your 50% plus one. And that's no recipe for reuniting a country after a century of partition. And it could actually cause as many problems as it solved for those 50% plus one.
Quentin Oliver again. Thank you, and it's great to have you back with us. Not that you went away or that we went away, but obviously a lot has happened in the last year, and a pandemic affecting the entire world indeed has distracted us, and rightly so, from some of the other problems and issues that need to be resolved. Thank you, and we look forward to, hearing more from you, because, as I've said, you're our go-to guy, Quentin Oliver. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
Okay.